You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The news from National Public Radio just ahead. More with Kathleen Dunn in Milwaukee in just a few moments. Talking next with the editor of Light and Liberty, Reflections on the Pursuit of Happiness, a book of essays on the American ideal, penned by Thomas Jefferson.
Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday morning, the 4th of October. Going to talk about Thomas Jefferson this hour. One early biographer described Thomas Jefferson as someone who could calculate an eclipse, survey an estate, tie an artery, plan an edifice, try a cause, break a horse, dance a minuet, and play the violin. And probably the list goes on. No wonder our guest has had a longtime fascination with Thomas Jefferson. He's the editor of Light and Liberty, Reflections on the Pursuit of Happiness, Thomas Jefferson. Eric Peterson is the editor, and what he did was really interesting. He laced together Thomas Jefferson's writings into 34 essays that were compiled after 10 years of studying his reflections in reports, state papers, speeches, and some 20,000 letters. The reason for the book, Eric says, is the promotion of the vision of Jefferson in order to inspire our country. Eric is a managing partner at Hawkins, Delafield, and Wood, a New York law firm. Clients include city, county, and state governments, including San Diego, Phoenix, Seattle, and New York. His interests include marathon running, meditation, and international travel, and his avocation, of course, the vision and achievements of Thomas Jefferson. He has studied Jefferson's life and works since 1993. Hello, Eric. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Yeah.
What an interesting way to put together his thoughts. And I understand from the preface of your book that it came from Jefferson's own The Life and Morals of Jesus of Nazareth, extracted textually from the Gospels in Greek, Latin, French, and English, which I have never read. But that's how you got the idea of putting it together like this?
Yes, that was definitely part of the thinking, because Jefferson was a great admirer of Jesus and felt that Jesus was the foremost moral philosopher that the world has ever seen. And he studied privately the Bible quite a bit. As you know, he was our nation's staunchest advocate for a wall of separation between church and state, because he thought the combined power of organized religion and civil government, you know, could lead to abuses. But on a personal level, he was a deep moral, spiritual thinker. He didn't feel it was his right to sort of put that on anybody else. But he studied the Bible, and he identified the words in the Bible that he thought surely came from Jesus himself. And he put them together in almost like a personal study notebook, which was only found after he died. And it was that kind of search for wisdom in a great thinker and a great philosopher and a great moral teacher like Jesus that I was inspired to. So let's look at Jefferson himself in that fashion, see what we can extract. It's the kind of impulse that people had when they selected short expressions to include on the inside wall of the Jefferson Memorial. I'm sure you've seen those. Almighty God has created the mind free kind of thing. And pull together these expressions in some interesting ways that would indicate his philosophy of pursuing happiness.
Interesting. So you read a lot of Jefferson.
Yes, as you indicated, he wrote some 20,000 letters.
Goodness.
As well as a tremendous number of state reports, papers, drafts of laws, and things like this. And when you read through them, you realize that the brilliance of his mind, which of course we all have a general sense of, but also the vastness of his heart, you know, the illumination of his soul. He was a great, great man. And he knew he was serving his fellow man. That was his philosophy. Nothing makes me more happy than to render any service in my power of whatever description. And so you can see him writing letters to friends, strangers, colleagues throughout his life. He said his letters were the journal of his life. Even though he never wrote a book, my publisher at Random House said that Light and Liberty is the book that Thomas Jefferson never wrote, although every word is his.
And that must make you feel good, huh? So you finally did it.
Well, I did go through the usual process of trying to find a publisher and was told by so many people that it's not right for our list. I wasn't quite sure I believed them, like all aspiring authors, but there's a lot of truth to that. And when it finally got in the hands of the head of the Modern Library at Random House, a fellow named David Ebershoff, he said, he called me the next day and said, this is right for our list, and he took it, and it was published in hardback last year, and now it's just recently out in paperback.
So did you find most of his thoughts that you've put into the essays were in his letters, or were they all over the board?
Well, what I pulled out was mostly his letters. I'd say about 80 to 85% of the content of this short book is from his letters. There are some things from his drafts of statutes. He wrote a famous law in Virginia, really the first law in the history of the world, called the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, which contains some marvelously evocative expressions of freedom and freedom from coercion and the like. But mostly the book consists of gems of insight and mm-hmm. wisdom drawn from his letters, and that's what gives the book a remarkably personal feel to it. It's almost like you feel like you're getting a series of letters from Thomas Jefferson on different various virtues and good qualities.
Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, the thing that I picked up was he put his feet in cold water and never got a cold in his lifetime. I thought, hey, there's something valuable, right?
he was a great practical person as well as an articulator of our nation's vision and ideals. He was a real believer in health, fitness, and so forth. And that was part of his fitness program as he saw it. You know, he said, without health, there is no happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And attention to health, then, should take the place of every other object. He was a great believer in walking, for example. He urged his friends to, as he said, take a great deal of exercise and on foot. Mm-hmm. Of all exercises, walking is the best. I have known many great walkers in my life, and I've heard particular accounts of many more, and I never knew or heard of one who was not healthy and long-lived.
Hmm. So those things our mothers used to say to us, or at least my mom, I'm getting old now, I used to walk to school, and that's why I didn't get very sick in my lifetime. I walked a good 5 miles there.
There's a lot of truth to that. His recipe was for good health, as he summed it up, was simple diet. These are his words now. Simple diet. Exercise and the open air, be its state what it will.
Hmm. And Dr. Spock used to say the same thing. put your babies in the open air, right? He was a wise man, too. I find it interesting that here you are a marathon runner. You must have taken some of his words really to heart, right?
I have. You know, he's inspirational on so many different levels. He himself practiced what he preached. He was a great outdoorsman and walker, a terrific horseman. When he was a student at William & Mary, he used to walk 2 miles a day every morning. And he lived for a good long 83 years, mm-hmm. And he enjoyed good health throughout most of his life. People don't know this generally, but he was largely a vegetarian.
Yeah.
He said, I use meat generally as a condiment. And even when he went in his late years, in his 70s and 80s, he took a lot of horseback exercise, riding some 8, 10, 15 miles a day, even in his sunset years.
Mm-hmm. Tell me where the love of country, he talks about the love of country in a way that you don't hear people discuss these days, love of country soaring above all minor passions. Where does he write about that, and where does that come from in his life? And what does it mean to him, a love of country?
Well, that's a terrific question, and I really was struck by the same feeling when I read through his writings. He sacrificed a lot for his country. You know, he held 9 public offices, and he spent most of his life away from home in the public service. And you could tell that, at least I had a clear sense, that the man had a giant heart, as we might say today. And he really identified with his fellow man and the ideal of service. And to Jefferson, love of country was more than a focus on kind of mundane national business matters. It was really a focus on the ideal and on the potential of our country. And he could love our country and even felt our country had a soul. He said, this was so evocative about his writings. One time he called the Declaration of Independence the genuine effusion of the soul of our country at that time. What an amazing concept that is, because mm-hmm. he's saying that there's something deep in the heart, the soul, the very depth of our land, that is meant to drive us forward, to expand us, to illumine us, to set an example for the rest of the world. And so much of his writing and his effort was designed to sort of bring out the best in our country, to have an optimistic view of the future. And this was essentially his vision. He had a vision of where our country could go. You know, obviously at that time there were only 3 to 5 million Americans. A fifth of them were in slavery, and he knew that the country had a long, long way to go, but you can't get anywhere unless you have a vision, and his vision is what we truly love about our country, and I think it's the one thing that people around the world treasure about America, and it is the sense of his patriotism and his love of his country that's coming through there.
Mm-hmm.
His vision is the vision of freedom and the rights of man. So clearly he's identified with the rights of man, self-government above all other blessings, as he put it, equality, and the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that we associate with Thomas Jefferson. That came from his love of our country and what he thought our country had the potential to be. There was another side of his vision as well, too, that's worth stressing, and I call it the vision of oneness. It's a vision of a sense of the common good, faith in your fellow citizen and the average citizen, universal harmony, and a belief in an ever brighter future. These kinds of things, this is a vision of oneness or identification with your fellow man and the potential for an ever brighter future. You see those thoughts and that wisdom evoked and expressed beautifully and eloquently in so many different ways to so many different people. I think it's why people were drawn to him.
Mm.
He was a great leader because he could draw people to him through the strength of his vision for our country.
Mm-hmm. He must have been something to have vegetables or whatever you had with him. He didn't have big meat dinner, but the writing about what it was like to be with him, that you realized you were in the presence of a great man, but he also made you feel extremely comfortable.
Yes, it was wonderful to read accounts about people who had actually personally experienced Thomas Jefferson. They saw him, you know, as an absolute gentleman, the very model of dignity and nobility, you might say natural nobility and graciousness. He was a very unpretentious man. He dressed simply. It was said that being with Thomas Jefferson was like experiencing light from an inexhaustible solar fountain.
Oh, my.
And it was said that he made, this is one fellow who was the Attorney General who knew him quite well, said he made transcendent leaps of the mind without the slightest exertion, and that he won every heart that approached him, as certainly as he astonished every mind.
Hmm.
And that was what it was like to have the wonderful opportunity to encounter Thomas Jefferson on a personal level.
Mm-hmm. What does he mean by this? It is in our nature to invent and execute, to find means within ourselves, not to lean on others, to contract a habit of industry and activity, to be assiduous in learning, and then he talks about exercise, etc. What about this finding means within ourselves?
Thomas Jefferson was a great believer in independence as well as interdependence, or oneness, as I was saying. On the independence side, he really felt that our society should be built from the individual up, and not from the ruler or the government down. It distinguishes our society from so many others. I like to say that we're fortunate because we had Thomas Jefferson, and so much of the rest of the world had Napoleon or Napoleon's equal. Here our society is built from the individual up and not from the ruler down. His idea was that it was each person's responsibility to manage their own life. They had a right and a responsibility to take the freedoms and capacities that he felt were God-given freedoms and capacities, and do the best we could with ourselves without coercion or interference, domination, or force from others. That was the freedom aspect. Everyone had the right to develop their capacities without freedom and interference with others.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very constructive philosophy, and he often encouraged young people to develop a useful, constructive, personal life philosophy, which could guide them through life. He said, every man's reason should be his own oracle. And he believed a lot in the human conscience as well. He called our conscience our faithful inner monitor. And he said that conscience is the only sure clue which will guide us free and clear of all doubts and inconsistencies. So he had his own life philosophy. It was personal to him. And you can tell the power of that life philosophy through his achievements and his vision and his life.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls, all of you Jefferson scholars or people who are just interested in knowing more about his writings. We welcome your phone calls this hour. Our guest is the editor of Light and Liberty, Reflections on the Pursuit of Happiness, Thomas Jefferson. Eric Peterson went through all of Jefferson's writings, and what he did was come up with his thoughts on certain themes and put them together in a series of essays on faith, happiness, aspiration, fitness, cheerfulness, gratitude, sincerity, not thirsting for gain, seeing the good, Jesus, nature's beauty, humility, sacrifice, being true to yourself, self-perfection, doing what is right, simplicity, living in the present, enthusiasm, patriotism, liberty, love, forgiveness, and the list goes on. Eric is presenting the book with the fond wish to see the standard of our country raised to the lofty level set by her founders, so beautifully and powerfully articulated, he says, in the writings of Thomas Jefferson. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we go to phone calls, Eric, tell me, you came up with all of these different topics for essays. How did you come up with this list? I gave the audience some of them.
Well, Kathleen, as you indicated, the subtitle of this book, Light and Liberty, is Reflections on the Pursuit of Happiness. I think all of us have a generalized idea about what the pursuit of happiness might mean in our own lives and for our society. I was intrigued to try to find out what Thomas Jefferson really meant by that. And at one point, I came across his embrace of the ancient Greek wisdom, which, as he put it, happiness is the aim of life. Virtue is the foundation of happiness. And utility is the test of virtue. It's a very interesting philosophy. It's a compelling blend of the ideal and the practical, because he's saying that in order for something to be virtuous, it has to actually work to produce happiness. He once wrote that the glow of one warm thought is to me worth more than money. And he said he had a very strong belief that, that happiness was a volitional matter. And he said that our greatest happiness, a lasting, abiding happiness, if you will, does not depend upon the circumstances of life in which chance has placed us, but is always the result of good conscience, good health, occupation, and freedom in all just pursuits. So building off of his philosophy that happiness rests on a moral foundation, let's say, more than on a material foundation, I tried to organize his thoughts, succinct expressions of maybe a sentence or two, under various virtues and good qualities of the type that you were kind enough to read out a few moments ago, because it was, I think, a useful organizing principle for his wisdom.
Yeah. Let's take some phone calls. Janet is our first caller. Hi, Janet.
Hi, I'm really enjoying the show, and I think the author has done a great job of culling some of Jefferson's most touching ideals. From detractors that I've talked with about Jefferson, they say that his slave ownership is something that is counter to his ideals of liberty and pursuit of happiness. I don't even know if he was a slave owner, and I was wondering if the author could talk a little bit about that.
Yes, Janet, thank you for that call and the opportunity to talk about Jefferson and slavery, because it's an aspect of Jefferson's life that's naturally, you know, quite perplexing to people today. You're right, he was a slave owner. About half the people in Virginia at the time actually were slaves, and he was a slave owner like so many others were. He held about 200 slaves throughout the course of his life, and they were all inherited. He was a semi-orphan. In fact, his dad died when he was 14. So he inherited about 60 slaves from his father and perhaps another 120 from his father-in-law when he died, when Jefferson was about 30 or so. And so with the slaves came the land in the traditional Virginia fashion. So he inherited them. He didn't trade them at all. He was not a slave trader. He wasn't cruel or abusive, no torture or anything like that. And there was real concern there. One of the stories that really struck me to show how Jefferson felt about slavery on a personal level was when he came back from serving as our nation's minister to France in 1789. He'd been away for 5 years, and he left instructions that there'd be no celebrations upon his return. Well, all of his friends came from all over Virginia, but most of his slaves came from all over Virginia. He had four different plantations to welcome him home, and as he drove up the mountaintop at Monticello there, they flung open the door of his carriage, and they kissed his hands and his feet, and they were laughing and welcoming him home and carrying him on their shoulders to the front door at his home in Monticello. So you have to say that there was real concern there for people on a personal basis. Now, his philosophy was that society had to make continuous progress, and that the people who were enslaved at that time, a vastly entrenched institution, had to be trained so that they could be self-sufficient individuals surviving as free people in a free society. And at the same time, you had to train the mind of the white man to accept the slaves and respect them on an equal the basis of equality, which he had in mind. Thomas Jefferson actually freed three of his slaves in the 1790s when he thought they had acquired self-sufficient skills as tradesmen to survive in what would be a fairly oppressive world. And unfortunately, and very tragically, all three of them took their own lives, which is kind of an indication of how difficult circumstances were back at that time. Maybe one final thing that might interest your caller. In my view, Thomas Jefferson did more than any of the founders of our country in his positions of power to try to roll back and ameliorate slavery. One of the first cases that he argued as a lawyer was to try to free a slave who had left the slave-holding states of Virginia and gone north. In the Declaration of Independence, there are three paragraphs that he wrote that were struck from the final version as approved by Congress, but they were very vital to him, dealing with the subject of slavery and condemning the King of England as the progenitor of the slave trade. And he had phrases in there like, "He, the King of England, hath suffered men to be bound and changed in one continent and transported thither to another to be bound into oppression," things like this. And when referring to the slaves, he said, M-E-N, capital M-E-N, and a slave reference twice. Same document that he says all men, lowercase men, are created equal. So clearly he believed in equality. And finally, my view is that Thomas Jefferson's vision, the vision that I referred to earlier, freedom, the rights of man, self-government, equality, and the pursuit of happiness, that's the vision that our country has embraced. That's what makes him one of our great national heroes. It's the vision that Abraham Lincoln embraced. Great tributes to Thomas Jefferson as he fought to free the slaves, and the same thing with Martin Luther King. All of those who have worked so hard to advance the progress of our country on the subject of equality really owe their philosophy of freedom and equality right back to the vision of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, it's really too bad that all of these wonderful minds who were present, though, at the beginning of the country, George Washington included, who freed his slaves in his will, Benjamin Franklin, who took this up as such a big cause, that they didn't get together and really do something about it back in those years because, holy cow, the price we've had to pay since then. I mean, they knew what was right, but they just they didn't act on it.
Well, it shows you how hard it is to achieve societal progress. It's very difficult to imagine a greater collection of human beings than those who founded our country, and that's why we revere them so much. Many of them were slaveholders, were living in slaveholding societies, and they knew, Jefferson absolutely knew, that slaveholding was wrong, and yet virtually all of them held on to their slaves for a variety of practical reasons, I think including, as I was alluding to earlier, the great concern over the slaves as individuals, what would happen to them as people in a oppressive society, not willing to accept or welcome them, no ways of providing for themselves. They also, I think it's important to note, the attitudes towards slavery were so hardened and entrenched, particularly in the South, that if any move had been made, a serious move had been made to try to abolish slavery at the time of the founding of the country, it would have literally ripped our country asunder, and there would have been no United States of America. They clearly recognized that at the time, and they knew it was one issue which had to be postponed to a time when people could become a little more enlightened, a little more willing to accept it. That, in my mind, is how I understand Jefferson's view, because the what they were trying to achieve, a freedom from the world's greatest superpower at that time, was a tremendous, colossal achievement. What they were trying to achieve as far as establishing the rights of man, even among the majority of society, and a sense of egalitarianism in society. It's hard for people to realize that back then you still had a very heavy hangover of continental European attitudes of social and economic priority and hierarchies. Jefferson called it distinctions by birth and badge, and it was very prevalent in our society. And it was his, he called it the Civil Revolution of 1800 when he was elected. He really, he and his successors tried to put in place principles and examples of an egalitarian society which advanced us tremendously and laid the foundation for the later egalitarian progress of all the that we've achieved since then in the area of gender rights and mm-hmm. racial equality and so forth. So they could only do so much, and to me, I'd rather look at it as a half-full glass mm-hmm. because they really set the vision that has allowed our egalitarianism vision to finally flourish and triumph in this great country.
Janet, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Richard from Muskego next. Hi, Richard.
Hello, and thank you both very much. I just find this very enlightening, and I'm quite appreciative. I would like to know if the collection of his thoughts on Jesus and what Jesus actually said, which for some time I've been trying to answer for myself, is in your book, and if you would elaborate on that a bit.
Well, thank you, Richard. It's an aspect of Jefferson that we don't ordinarily focus on. We think of Jefferson as the, what I would say, the fiercely independent thinker. He once wrote, I am of a sect by myself, as far as I know. If I could not go to heaven but with a party, I would not go there at all. And he, as I said before, he constantly urged young people to develop their own productive, useful philosophy. He said that the relations which exist between man and his maker and the duties resulting from those relations are the most important to every human being and the most incumbent upon his study and investigation. And so he was a believer in reason and conscience and so forth. But he didn't put that on anybody else. He said, this is a quote, I never told my religion nor scrutinized that of another. I never attempted to make a convert nor wished to change another's creed. Now that's an expression of Jefferson as a fiercely independent thinker, and that is why we don't really associate the subject of religion, Jesus, faith, anything like that, with Thomas Jefferson. In fact, he was mercilessly attacked when he ran for president as a fanatic in for his belief in democracy and as an atheist because of his opposition to the combined power of church and state. And he had written sentiments like this, it does me no injury if my neighbor believes there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. Now, as your caller indicated, that was his position as far as public policy goes and is not coercing one another as far as matters of religion goes. But I found that in reading through all of his writings, I found a very clear sense of a deep moral, you might even say spiritual thinker. He was, in his personal life, it's a very personal matter, this whole Jefferson Bible Project, which we talked about earlier, was a very personal activity. It was a result of his own study and investigation, following his own philosophy. And, as I said, it was found in his papers upon his death. But so he personally studied and developed his own useful life philosophy. He used the phrase, our religion, in his public speeches, which I took to mean simply the common belief in God or a supreme being that all religions have in common. You'd also see the phrase sacred occasionally in his writings, but he almost always used it only in connection with his discussions of the rights of man. So closely did he feel that our rights of freedom of speech and assembly and self-government and so forth and freedom of religion were actually God-given rights or divinely given rights. At one point, he even used the phrase, in referring to the Declaration of Independence, he said it was the genuine effusion of the soul of our country. And just to sort of sum up this discussion of Jefferson and religion, he once wrote this, faith and works will show their worth by their weight in the scales of eternal justice before God's tribunal. Now, that was written in a private letter, and so his friends knew him as a you might say a personal, private, spiritual man, but the public knew him almost as a secularist, as an atheist, mm-hmm. because of his opposition to the combined power of church and state as institutions.
Does that answer your question, Richard?
Oh, it does, unless there's a separate book from his papers found after his death about his writings that he assembled about the thoughts about Jesus.
Well, there is a section in this book called Jesus. It's a short section, but it indicates Jefferson's view of Jesus as a great moral teacher, thinker, and philosopher. That was how he thought of Jesus, the most sublime system of morals ever taught to man, as he said. Actually, this book, the Jefferson Bible, the work that was found upon his death, is in print today. You can actually buy it. It's published, and it is called the Jefferson Bible. And there are also a couple of good works about Jefferson and religion that have been written by biographers of Jefferson focusing on that aspect of his life.
Hmm. Well, I certainly will read your book, and I will try to find the Jefferson Bible. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to Pat from East Troy next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you for taking my
sure.
call. I'm in the process of reading a book called American Normal, which uses Jefferson as an example of possibly having had Asperger's syndrome. Are you familiar with that work or that suggestion?
I'm not, and I'm not familiar with that syndrome either.
It's related in some ways to autism, but the outstanding characteristics, as I understand from this one book that I'm in the process of reading, which does not make me an authority, it seems to have a characteristic of very high intelligence and inability to socialize, which seems completely the reverse of what I hear about Jefferson outside of this book.
And the book says that Jefferson may have had this, or?
Yes. Mm. They point out examples such as Monticello being on a mountain where he kept trying to change it. It never was finished, and it was isolated, and isolation is one of the characteristics of this syndrome. It seems like a rather weak argument to me, but I just wondered if any of that came into your understanding of Jefferson through his writings.
Well, I have to be frank and say that kind of view of Jefferson is somewhat representative of the biographies that have been written about Jefferson in the last 25 years or so. There's been some great ones. For those who are interested in great biographies of Jefferson, I'd recommend those written by Merrill Peterson, no relation to me, and also Willard Stern Randall, two great, great biographies. But there have been other books, both about Jefferson directly and indirectly about him, that have sought to find indications of less than admirable characteristics, using what is clearly, faint associations. And it's pretty much an exercise in imagination, as far as I can tell. This, what the caller just went through, to me, is a good example, because when you read what people experienced when they met Thomas Jefferson, as I indicated earlier, you can't say that it was like experiencing light from an inexhaustible solar fountain, which one person and still had the same view that he had an inability to socialize. In fact, Thomas Jefferson very much believed that social harmony was probably the greatest virtue, without which, he said, life would be but a dreary thing. He once wrote that political differences should not and need not lead to personal animosities. And he once wrote that he'd never seen an instance of one of two disputants convincing the other by arguing. And he said that it was one of the things that made Dr. Franklin, his good friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin, the most amiable of men in society, never to contradict anybody. If he were urged to announce an opinion, he did so by asking questions, as if for information, or perhaps to suggest doubts. So Thomas Jefferson, even though his public speaking abilities were fairly limited, on a private social level, he was delightful. He was engaging. It was said that when you met Thomas Jefferson, he was a little bit reserved at first, but he opened up fairly quickly, and you found yourself feeling like you were in the company of an old friend, an old gracious friend. These are the views of Thomas Jefferson that I think are probably the correct ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is very interesting. It completely refutes this suggestion that he had Asperger's. Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Pat. For Thanks for the call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. And our guest this hour is Eric Peterson, who has edited the words of Thomas Jefferson. He has gone through 20,000 letters, reports, state papers, speeches, and theme, and put together Jefferson's thoughts in terms of theme, what he had to say about Jesus, what he had to say about self-discipline, about dreaming the impossible, about liberty, about patriotism, simplicity, doing what's right, being true to yourself, humility, sacrifice, seeing the good, sincerity, gratitude, cheerfulness, and the list goes on. Eric spent 10 years immersed, really, in Jefferson's life and works, and has given us this book now, Light and Liberty, which has been published just now in paperback, and it's part of the Modern Library Classics. We'll be with more of your phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We can give you Eric's website as well, because you can order the book there and get more information about Thomas Jefferson. So Eric's website is www.lightandliberty.org, lightandliberty.org. Tell me, I read somewhere that you had this youthful enthusiasm for Thomas Jefferson that was rekindled later in your life. Tell me about it.
Well, that's right, Kathleen. Like so many Americans, I've always had a generalized fondness for Thomas Jefferson, and I took my family trip down there as a young teenager and was inspired, and went back in 1993 to help celebrate the 250th anniversary of his birth. He was born in 1743. And when you go up to the top of that mountain that our previous caller just referred to, I don't get a sense of isolation at all. I get a sense of vastness and vision and beauty and illumination and color and so forth and endless possibilities. It's a beautiful location for those who may have not had the opportunity to visit Monticello yet. And that got me inspired to read Thomas Jefferson's writings and learn more about, you know, why we are so drawn to him. And I chose Light and Liberty for the title of the book because, to me, it captures the essence of his vision. Now, he once wrote that that our country really is the sole repository of the sacred fire of freedom and self-government. And he felt that light, or education is what he meant by light, was important to help us preserve our liberties. He once said that if a society expects to be both ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. Mm-hmm. And by ignorance, of course, you know, light meaning overcoming ignorance, ignorance meaning lack of education, lack of knowledge, lack of our history, institutions, traditions, and rights, and so forth, but also on a more fundamental basis. He thought we needed to establish light as a general spirit of reason, of candor, as he said, of moderation, tolerance, respect, and these are his words, mild laws readily obeyed, and valuing self-government above all other blessings. That was his notion of light on a societal basis. You can see that today some of those notions are in retreat. There's perhaps not as much moderation, tolerance, and respect as we'd like to see.
I'd say that's true.
And perhaps there's not as much valuing self-government above all other blessings, as he said. When half of our citizens don't even take the trouble to vote, when so much of our public discourse, you know, is shout fests, and when the sense of the common good or the oneness that I was referring to earlier, which is an essential part of his vision, is fraying, and perhaps this disaster maybe is bringing out the true spirit of our country, you know, the genuine effusion of the soul of our country, if you will, is coming out when people are helping their fellow citizens so spontaneously and so dramatically. This is the heart of America that Thomas Jefferson really cherished. This was his idea of patriotism.
Yeah. Let's take more calls. G is next from Madison. Hi, G.
Hello. I'm speaking as a person who is non-Caucasian. And as a non-Caucasian, I find Jefferson to be a malignant hypocrite. I mean, look at his brutal incursions into Haiti to suppress the slave rebellion against the French. Look at the way euphemisms are used to gloss over his multitude of character flaws. Sally Hemings was his mistress. Excuse me, I mean, she was a slave. What would she say? She would say no. I mean, that to me is rape. But it's always glossed over. It seems like America revels in the thing of do as I say, not do as I do. Because if white Americans had any sort of compassion or understanding of non-whites, how non-whites would feel about a man, if I was living in America at that time, I would be picking cotton. So I do not understand how anyone can gloss over all of these things about him not freeing his slaves, him having slaves. If he was that great a person, he would have given up his property. But instead, he pushed further westward to increase America's land holdings. He bought the Louisiana purchase. He had no respect for anybody who wasn't white.
Eric.
Well, there's a lot of concern there expressed in the caller's voice. Maybe just a couple of thoughts, because obviously the views are very deeply held.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure as much I can say that would dissuade that, but let me just offer a couple of thoughts. I was struck by the international response to this book, Light and Liberty, you know, which attempts to capture, you know, Thomas Jefferson's vision. And it wasn't just a vision for America. You know, his vision was for the freedom and the equal rights of the entire world. We had a very nice comment from Archbishop Desmond Tutu, the great South African reconciler, who said that he found in Light and Liberty and Thomas Jefferson's wisdom there, he said it had the power to capture the imagination and energize the present-day world to, again, dream great dreams and do good deeds. Even Mikhail Gorbachev, the great liberator of the Soviet Union, found that Light and Liberty was very inspiring to him. In fact, Gorbachev was a great admirer of Jefferson and found a lot in Jefferson's philosophy to inform his own personal political philosophy of glasnost and perestroika, or openness and restructuring. He said Thomas Jefferson's vision could bring us together as citizens and had the power to uplift us and again kindle the dream of living together in concert and harmony. So here are two great international leaders who, in their own activities in the service of mankind and trying to achieve progress for all of mankind, are great admirers and appreciators of Thomas Jefferson. There is a lot of criticism in the air these days about Jefferson that has the character and flavor that our caller just went through, expressing his own concerns. I would like to say one thing about the Sally Hemings story, because it's in that story that seems to be encapsulated this idea that Thomas Jefferson was not true to his ideals and that he was an abuser of other people. That story is not true. I believe that it's come to have common public acceptance today and belief as accepted fact because of the so-called DNA evidence that was published about 7 years ago, which the media took to mean as proof that Thomas Jefferson had a child through his slave, Sally Hemings. That DNA evidence proved no such thing. All it proved was that one of 25 Jeffersons, a male Jefferson from that era, was most likely the father of one of Thomas Jefferson's, one of Sally Hemings' children. And in fact, the oral tradition of that slave, Eston Hemings, and his descendants was that it was Uncle Jefferson that was the father of his lineage. And Jefferson had a brother named Randolph. That was the Uncle Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson did not privately deny any relationship with Sally Hemings in correspondence with well-placed people during the time he was president when these slanderous allegations came out. And this issue was studied, but he would never dignify the story with a public refutation just because he didn't want to give it any more life as the falsehood that it was. And this issue was studied by 12 scholars about 5 years ago who published a report called the Jefferson Hemings Scholars Commission Report. For those who might be interested in reading about it, it's on a website called the Thomas Jefferson Heritage Society website. And it's a very long examination in a completely scholarly manner about the allegations. and the report concludes that it's almost certainly false. People have taken that slanderous allegation, which was a political slander against Thomas Jefferson during his own lifetime when he was president, and used it as a symbolism of a supposed hypocrisy and abuse. It's no such thing. He did not live that kind of life. He was the esteemed character that we believe him to be. And I'm afraid I have a different view of Jefferson's character than your caller has.
You just have to take in, I guess, some of the contradictions in his life. He had slaves, you know, and at some point you factor that into who he was, and you wish he didn't, and you wish, you know, that there weren't that contradiction in his life, but you have to sort of live with it, I guess.
Well, we talked about that earlier in the program, and I think that what's missing from the condemnation of Thomas Jefferson there is an appreciation that Jefferson had real concerns for those who were actually enslaved at the time. It's hard for people to kind of imagine back to that time when it was such an entrenched institution. A good third of his slaves weren't even here in this country when he inherited them from his father-in-law.
Yeah.
And so they came from another culture and world and were supposed to effectively function here without any training for the kinds of jobs that were available here, or abilities to live independent lives. So this is an issue that always troubled him, and he knew that it was a stain on America for having allowed this institution to sort of entrench itself. But as I said before to your previous caller, I believe that we should be grateful to Thomas Jefferson for setting forth the vision which allowed America to sort of shake off this awful evil. He once wrote that the ground of liberty is to be gained by inches. In other words, societal enlightenment, the light that's necessary for liberty, can only progress in a very gradual way. And you can see in the years since Thomas Jefferson died in 1826 what our society has struggled through to try to achieve his vision. So I believe that we ought to be a little magnanimous toward the great Jefferson and credit him with setting forth the vision which has allowed us to achieve what we've achieved in the area of rights and equality.
Thanks for the call, G. Let's go to Ron from Marshfield next. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Kathleen, I'm good.
Good.
Yeah, it's a great show. I got, I really hate to, because Tom Jefferson is one of my faves, right? Yeah, so to speak.
Okay.
Yeah, for a long time, you know. And then we'll bypass the sex with slaves things, okay? We discussed that.
Right.
Now, what I want to know about is the pursuit of happiness.
Okay.
Your life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? All right. So my pursuit of happiness was, illegal. What's with that? Mushrooms? I do mushrooms. I did 10 years ago, whatever, you know, and stuff. And it was like, all the stuff is illegal. And a lot of people obviously are pursuing this stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what direction you're taking us in, but what about pursuit of happiness? Jefferson's thought on happiness.
Thomas Jefferson, had high standards for himself and for his country. And he meant by the pursuit of happiness, happiness of a lasting, deep, abiding satisfaction kind of happiness. And I think I discussed a little bit earlier in the program, I don't know if you were on the program, but he very much believed in the ancient Greek wisdom, which was that happiness is the aim of life. But he thought that the foundation of lasting and abiding happiness was freedom and virtue and oneness with others. And he thought that we should cultivate our personal virtues to try to achieve happiness. And it was, as I said before, it was within our volitional control. And so what I tried to do in this book was identify the kinds of virtues within which he thought happiness was found, or in other words, how we could go about pursuing happiness. He was a big believer, for example, in gratitude, humility, qualities like this. He believed that it was pursuing particular virtues to try to expand your capacities for self-giving, service, kind of higher standards, aspirations, was really the source of our true and abiding happiness.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye. We're out of time. Thanks, Eric, so much for being with us.
Kathleen, thank you for the opportunity.
Eric Peterson, the book is Light and Liberty, Reflections on the Pursuit of Happiness, Thomas Jefferson. If you want more information, it is published by Modern Library, and you can go to the website lightandliberty.org. Thanks to Kate Brown for producing the hour, to John Treader for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios, and thanks, everybody, for listening and calling. We'll be with you again tomorrow, same time, 9 to 11 in the morning and 9 to 11 in the evening as well. We're repeated at that time. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.